man
like us. We now move to the second statement that we need to make about Jesus if we're going to be faithful to the New Testament and to the creeds of our early church. A statement that must be seen within the context of that first basic statement that Jesus is man. And it's the statement made that Jesus is God. Chalcedon, as we saw last week, put it very clearly, Jesus is God, of the one being of the Father, the very same being whom the Father is. And when the Council of Chalcedon expressed it, they weren't innovating, they weren't claiming to say anything new, they were quoting the Council of Nicaea, the faithful believers of the early 4th century. And the Council of Nicaea wasn't trying to be innovative. They were simply speaking from the experience and the understanding of the communities from which they came, the believing Christian people. And we see that it goes right back to Ignatius of Antioch, and in fact it's part of the people's response to their religious experience. We find it even, don't we, in the 4th Gospel, where we have Thomas worshipping Jesus and saying, "My Lord," he fell down and said, "My Lord and my God." So there's, right back in our literature, there's this sense of responding to Jesus with a response that is kept for God. If we take that statement now, I would like to go with you fairly deeply and at some length into what are the grounds for that claim. Why did, obviously the claim goes back and back and back, why did those first disciples of Jesus come to this insight? On what did they base it? What was the experience that forced such extraordinary statements from their lips? And I think it's this. Clearly, Jesus was received as a prophet. Just like all the prophets of old, he clearly spoke beautifully and he spoke from God, and people responded to words received as coming from God. But they did a lot more than that, as we saw in the New Testament. He wasn't just a prophet. He wasn't even just the greatest of the prophets. They weren't even content to say that he was greater even than Moses, all of which language was quite available to them. They go, "John, my Lord and my God," goes well beyond any high praise of a prophetic human being. The key, as far as I can see, must be in their response to Jesus. They must have, and here I'm going beyond what I know, but I want to explore it with you. We spoke earlier of religious experience, which is the response to God, the mystery God. And sometimes in our life, frequently in our life, people are sacraments of God. People are prophets of God. Human love can be a sign and a symbol and a statement, an occasion and more of the mystery of God that takes us into this religious awareness of the sacred and the mystery and the transcendent. All of that was in the heart of John, the beloved disciple, when he was with Jesus. But there must have been more. And the only way I can think of it is that when John, the beloved disciple, responded to Jesus, he found that the response he made to the man Jesus was actually identical with his response to God. Not just a picture of it, not just a fragment of it, not a mystery of it, but it was the same response. I'm not suggesting that John recognized that immediately. Of course he didn't. And of course it took them to the death of Jesus on the cross to realize what was going on in their hearts and minds in his company. This extraordinarily unique experience they were having. In fact, it was not only his death, it was after that. It was the post-crucifixion experiences in the early church. It's a whole life journey of experiences building up. But it came down to when Jesus spoke to them, they found themselves responding as they had only responded to God. When Jesus loved them, they experienced being loved unconditionally, unreservedly, totally, mysteriously, sacredly. It was God's love that they were being moved by. When Jesus forgave them, there was something unique about that forgiveness that was identified by them gradually, as they pondered the mystery of it, with God forgiving them. They, of course, recognized that Jesus was not the Father. They saw him praying to God the Father. So that they recognized that. But while recognizing Jesus' unique identity and the fact that he was a man and not God the Father, they still had to come to terms in ways that surely they didn't understand. It's incomprehensible. But whatever it was, it didn't allow them to be satisfied with the most superb language available to them. They had to say something about this Jesus, that he was God as Son. And that faith response wasn't just a blind act of wishful thinking. I think we now come to the very important area of the lives of the people that believed it, of the John, the beloved disciple, and of Polycarp and of Ignatius of Antioch and so on, that their actual response to Jesus, when they responded to him in this way, the fruit in their lives was magnificent by any human standards. By their fruit you'll know them. That the actual fruit of their faith, and that's why they kept believing, why they initially came to the insight is mysterious enough. Why they held to it was that it was confirmed in their life by the quality of their human love, particularly, and their human freedom and their prayer that emerged out of this attitude of faith and commitment to him. At all events, whether I've touched on or not the psychological basis of their faith in Jesus, the fact is that they did believe that he was God.